The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
I am fired up for today's show. I know it's like every other day.
I was going to say, what's new?
But I'm particularly fired up for today's show. There's some stuff going on in our courts here locally that have left me absolutely incredulous. We have an exclusive story we're going to lead things off with. Welcome to The Big Show. We are streaming The Big Lead here on Facebook Live, and I got no time to waste. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
I do pride our show on the fact that I think we break more stories than any local talk show in the country, and I always say it's because of our listeners. We get the most incredible tips from listeners, and I think we've all become pretty good at sussing out which ones are legit and which ones are nonsense.
Yes, and we have listeners who do some serious research.
We do.
And they spend a lot of time.
And we got a tip a couple of days ago about an absolutely brutal rapist who was allowed to walk out of court here on Monday. And I'm going to have Hannah Scott, a reporter, has been working on this story all week, and she's going to join us at 12:30 this afternoon. But let me give you just some of the details of this exclusive story. And we have to go back to 2006. There was a woman down on 2nd and Pike in downtown Seattle. Two guys in a car stopped, picked her up, and then they drove to a homeless encampment where one of the guys... First of all, one was driving. The other guy, whose name we now know is Johnny Lay, he raped this woman in the back seat of this Cadillac. Then they drove to a homeless encampment, and he told her that he wanted her to be one of his prostitutes, according to the certificate of probable cause from the Seattle police that we obtained that was written up in 2007. The woman said, "I absolutely do not want to be a prostitute for you. You would have to kill me first." So the guy took a screwdriver, held it to the woman's body and head while he brutally, violently raped her. And that's all I'm going to say because the details in the certificate of probable cause are so horrible.
Well, that's horrific enough.
Yes, exactly. The woman goes to the hospital. They do a rape kit on her, and then you know about this backlog of rape kits in our state?
Yes.
They still hadn't tested it for almost 10 years to see if they could figure out who this violent, you know, rapist with a deadly weapon was. They finally do the testing in 2016. They find this guy, Johnny Lay, back in Illinois, and he says, you know what? And his attorney says, "You've been clean for most of the last 10 years," even though he has quite a criminal history before this alleged rape. And the attorney says, "Come on out, go to court." So Monday, he goes to court here in King County. The prosecutors want $500,000 bail. He's, you know, a guy with a homeless history, with a long criminal history. I'm looking at his criminal background. He's accused of assault in the third degree, sexual assault on a 14-year-old girl.
Sounds about standard for all those crimes that you've just listed.
2001, domestic violence, no contact order violation. That was a felony. So the guy's in court on Monday, and you're thinking, well, we're going to hold him until he stands trial for this rape. $1 bail,
what?
And he walked out.
$1?
Basically on his own recognizance. And the details of why are so infuriating to me, and I'm going to save some of those.
And that's not a typo? $1?
Which is basically on your own recognizance. They let him walk out of court when he's accused of a violent, brutal rape with a deadly weapon. And that's all I'm going to tell you right now, because I'm going to save some of the details for when Hannah Scott is in here with me at 12:30. But I think you'll be as infuriated as I am when you hear that this guy is out walking around today.
Still in this area.
In the Puget Sound area. Yes. So I'm going to give you more details, but Hannah's been working on this all week, and I'm going to save some of the reason why that the defense attorney and the judge used to let this guy walk out. So Hannah's going to join us right after the bottom of the hour news, and we will tell you the rest of this story. Next up in the big lead.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
And I got another story I'm furious about. I told you about this school that's being built in Edmonds yesterday.
Right.
$50 million K-8 school. It's all set to open up this fall.
It's for 600 students, right?
Right.
600?
No. Yeah. All set to open this fall, except it doesn't have any water. And that's because the local water district, the Olympic Water District, is in a dispute with the Edmonds School District. And they're saying, no, we don't like your storm water drainage system.
Because the school was trying to go green, so they did a certain type of setup. And
that
so
was permitted by the city of Edmonds. So they have a permit, they built the school, and now the water district says, no, we're afraid that this drain water is going to leach into our aquifer, and since we're afraid of that, you got to do all these other things, and if you don't do it, we're not going to hook you up to water. So now, all these kids in Edmonds are going to have to go to a old shuttered middle school in Linwood called Alderwood.
Like 15 minutes away, right?
15 minutes away. We talked about this yesterday afternoon on our show. Channel 4, I saw, talked about this last night, and they talked to the water district's general manager, who says, yeah, we can't let them open up this school.
Their method that they chose to get rid of the stormwater puts the district's water source at risk.
Okay, now that woman, the general manager, Lynn Danielson, she is going to join me at 1:30 this afternoon because I'm really ticked off on behalf of taxpayers who just built a $50 million school. And who knows how much it's going to cost to move all these kids to this Alderwood Middle School in Linwood, 15 minutes away. And then sometime in the school year, if they ever reach an agreement with the water district, then they got to move everybody back to this new school. But and then Channel 4, ComoNews.com, they also talked to the Edmonds School District spokeswoman, Kelly Franson, about this.
We chose to temporarily move the students. We don't know how long it's going to be. Our goal is to get the students into their brand new building as quickly as possible.
Okay, and honestly, I don't know enough about storm water runoff and leakage into aquifers, except I know that all of this stuff is usually wildly exaggerated. Remember when King County was going to charge fees to all the rural septic tank owners? And they said, well, if your tank leaks, it could get into a stream, and that stream could get into Puget Sound, so we need to charge you an inspection fee every year. Meanwhile, King County, right after that, was dumping millions of gallons of raw sewage into Puget Sound because they couldn't manage their system at Discovery Park there. So I don't know who's right. I don't know who's wrong. But I know as a taxpayer, and I know as a government watchdog and as an advocate for the people out there, it's insane that these kids have to go to a shuttered school because a school district and a water district can't just say, you know what, let's do what's best for the taxpayers and the kids. Hook up the water, get the kids in, we'll figure this out.
Well, another little complicated twist to this is that the water district wants the school district to say, if something were to happen, we would be fully liable. That's the other one of the other hangups too.
Yeah.
So they don't want taxpayers to be on the hook if, because of these things that allegedly aren't part of this new system, water system, if something goes awry, it shouldn't go to the taxpayers because the district didn't go through
but
certain
requirements. But what I want to know, and I'll ask the water district person when she comes on at 1:30, what are the odds that a system that was permitted by the city is going to contaminate the aquifer? Is it 10%? Is it 1%? Is it 1/100th of 1%?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, at some point, you got to do cost versus benefit, but nobody in government does that. Here's the principal of that school talking to Channel 4.
Quite honestly, Edmonds taxpayers paid for a beautiful building, and it's going to sit empty, and that shouldn't happen.
And the parents aren't happy either.
We'll try and make it work, but we really want to see
our new school open. We really, really do.
And where are we? The water district's talking to us at 1:30. Where are we with the school district, Nicole? Are they going to talk to me as well?
Yeah, I believe she's in a meeting, so she's going to get back to me.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to try to get to both sides. I'm going to try to look out for the taxpayers out there. And then there's this.
The big lead. Your tax dollars at work.
Here's what I figured out, Ursula, last night. As we've been discussing quite a bit lately, I would never, ever, ever run for political office. I have to take off my sweatshirt.
I know, you are really sweating. You are working up a sweat.
I'm working myself into a lather here. Seriously, I just had to take off my sweatshirt because I'm getting so sweaty
talking.
You're
triply outraged today.
I really am. So, but I've decided that if I wanted to ever run for office, I could win mayor of Seattle in a heartbeat. And I never thought that was true. But I'm looking at, I'm getting all these emails from these panicked people out in Magnolia because the city says, yeah, we got to tear down the Magnolia Bridge and we don't have the money to replace it. Really? The city of Seattle's budget compared to a similar size city, and I've talked to you about this before, but the folks at Safe Seattle put this together. In Seattle, our budget for 2018 is $5.6 billion. Boston is almost the exact same size of Seattle, as Seattle. Their budget is $3.1 billion. Seattle's budget is almost double that of Boston. Boston has almost no unsheltered homeless people, less than 200. And also, Seattle has 1,400 cops. Boston has 2,200 police officers for about half of the budget. And what I figured out was if you just prioritize, like if I was mayor of Seattle, first thing I would do is I would say, you know what, we're going to get rid of a third of city government. We're going to fire a third of city government workers. And I know people are saying, what about the union contracts? You'd never be able to negotiate that. That's why I'm not running for mayor. If you want me to fix things, you got to give me absolute power. But I would get rid of a third of Seattle city government, and our budget would still be much bigger than Boston's. So that's a start. You do that, and I could save you about $500 million a year just by getting rid. And by the way, we've added 1,300 Seattle government workers since the accused child rapist became mayor. He added 1,300 government bureaucrats to the payroll. So all of them would be gone, and then we'd start prioritizing. And the first thing I would do is I would hire more cops, and I'd get our police officer, police department level, and I know they're having trouble hiring right now, but I would make sure that we empowered our cops, we would enforce all of our vagrancy and drug laws, and we would start cleaning up the homelessness problem, because the two things that government should be responsible for at this level, at the local level, I'm talking about city, county, state. Two things, public safety and taking care of infrastructure. And, of course, there's, you know, parks and schools and all of those things. Schools are ruled by the Supreme Court and the Constitution, the paramount duty. You take care of all of those things. But with the city budget, you don't have to do that with the city budget. So get rid of the bureaucrats. Start focusing on infrastructure. You'd build that Magnolia Bridge because you need it. Unfortunately, you have a bunch of anti-car zealots at every level of government locally, and they want to gridlock the city. They need to gridlock the city. They want everybody to get to, I saw a story last night, West Seattle. They're building all these, you know, thousands of units with no parking. And all these poor families that have kids who have to get to sports lessons and music lessons and school events, they can't take mass transit. And all of these families in West Seattle that have to drive their kids to events and get to, you know, work meetings and all of that, city is intentionally destroying the ability to get around. with West Seattle, Magnolia, all of these things. Okay, where else could we carve out some money? Again, a listener tip sent us this from the Seattle City Council's latest budget meeting about the education and preschool tax. So they're $637 million over 7 years for education and preschool. And what's one of the things that they're going to put in? A $1.4 million health clinic exclusively for LGBTQ kids at the Nova Alternative High School. Now, they have a health clinic there. They can access the health care at Garfield or World High Schools. But they went to the Seattle City Council, and they said, oh, no, as LGBTQ kids, we don't feel welcome at those other schools. Now, is that real or is that perceived? The problem, of course, is anytime anything has LGBTQ attached to it, nobody's allowed to question it. And so the Seattle City Council, they said, well, you don't feel welcome. We're a welcoming, inclusive city. So we'll spend $1.4 million on a health clinic for a tiny percentage of high school students. That's not being a reasonable steward of money. Frankly, you should build a bridge from Magnolia to replace the aging one before you start building stuff like that. So I'm telling you right now, if somebody with some common sense came in and said, look, our budget's almost double that of similar sized cities. We're going to slash the size of government, slash the amount of bureaucracy. We're going to fund infrastructure and public safety first. We're going to boost the number of cops. We're going to replace decaying bridges. And we're going to hold off on free community college that ain't free. We're going to hold off on free bus passes that ain't free. I said yesterday, the only thing those things have to do with free is it's teaching kids to be freeloaders, teaching them at a very early age that government is their provider and everything in life is free. And so all of those things be on the back burner until you clean up the homelessness problem and replace bridges that are falling down. And I think this region is at such a boiling point that if someone came in and said all of that stuff, yeah, would you be picketed by the zealots, the Kashama Sawant zealots out there? Yeah. And the thing is, I know I could get this done. I know I could get this done. I just don't want the gig because the one I have is too much fun, even if it does make me really sweaty. And that is your big lead for today.
The Big Lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, man. Okay, you got to hear why an accused, brutal rapist who used a deadly weapon was allowed to walk free from a King County courtroom on Monday. It's an unbelievable story. We will have the exclusive details next on the Dory Monson Show. Well, this story came to us exclusively through a listener's tip, and it sounded unbelievable to me. But what the listener told us was that there was a brutal rape in our state 11 years ago. They just put the rapist, the accused rapist, in court, and he walked out for $1. And when you hear the details of this story, I think you're going to be as flabbergasted as I am. Our reporter, Hannah Scott, has been working on this ever since we got the tip, and she joins us here. Thanks for doing all this, Hannah.
You bet, Dory.
So let me give some of the basic details of this. There is a guy who in 2007 picked up a woman near 2nd and Pike in downtown Seattle, took her into a car, an accomplice drove her and him to a homeless encampment where, according to the certificate of probable cause, he brutally raped this woman held a screwdriver to her, told her that he wanted her to be a prostitute working for him. And she said, no, you'd have to kill me. And that's when he held a screwdriver to her and then brutally, violently raped this woman. All of that's pretty much what you found.
That's absolutely everything I found. She talked about how she begged him to stop, things like that. It also says that she was also raped in the back of the car at another point. And that she told him when he asked about her being a, told her he wanted to prostitute for him, that she would rather die. He would have to kill her. She wouldn't do that.
Okay, so all this is back in 2007, but at the time the woman went to the hospital and they did a rape kit?
Right, yep, she did report it. She actually, I should point out, she, in the car, because the accomplice came back after the rape in the woods, picked them both up. They drove her around for hours. Sometime during that time, this guy's ID dropped out in the back seat where she was. She saw it, and then he threatened to kill her if she identified him to the cops or said anything like that. Now that she had seen his ID, she didn't listen. When she got away, she went to the police, and then was taken for a rape kit back in 2007.
Okay, and what they found? Well, first of all, how long did it take them to check for DNA, the guy's DNA, with this rape kit?
Until 2016, that was finally submitted to the state crime lab for testing.
A brutal, violent, forcible rape, and for 9 years, they don't check for DNA?
Well, and that's, I don't know how much you know about our rape kit backlog. That's what happened. That was going on here forever in our state. It was up to each individual department, police department, when or if they would submit these at all. Some police officers wouldn't submit them if, you know, the victim knew the attacker. They thought it was a no-win case, something like that. Others just thought that I don't know what they thought. They just didn't submit them. In 2015, we passed legislation. Now they're all supposed to be sent in. But this one didn't go till 2016. I'm trying to find out if SPD had it that whole time or right. It was somewhere in the middle. I'm not sure yet, but it didn't go to the lab till 2016.
So when they finally did do the test, they found a match for a guy named Johnny Lay. Mm-hmm. What do we know about this guy?
Johnny Lay is a pretty much chronically homeless person. He lived here in King County for a long time, had major issues with crack cocaine and other drugs. He is also a registered sex offender. He had an incident in 2001. What I know about that is that it involved a 14-year-old when he was 28 years old. It's a third degree, so it's, you know, not as bad as some of the others, I guess you would say, but he's still a registered sex offender. So a big deal there.
So did they have to extradite him from Illinois or was he out here now?
Yeah. So he had left. He moved from King County back in July or so of last year. And they issued a bench warrant for him, $500,000 back in May after they matched the DNA. Then he voluntarily came.
Okay.
Back here.
So he comes out here, he goes into court, and again, there's a violent, forcible, with a deadly weapon. I mean, I assume the screwdriver is considered a deadly weapon.
Yes,
when
absolutely.
You're holding it to a woman's head. So now fast forward to what happened in court with this guy.
Okay, so he's now charged when he comes back with rape one. He goes to court. Prosecutors are feeling pretty confident in their case. They want it's just an arraignment. You know, it's his initial appearance. They want him held on $500,000 bail. They make their argument, which is essentially just what you just said. This was a violent crime. He's got a history. He's a registered sex offender. We need him to stay locked up until we get to, you know, go on with the case. And then his defense attorney, Lay's defense attorney, went to the judge with this.
In 2007, the state had my client's name and his arrest history as part of the investigative file. They had his DNA on record at that time. They had physical evidence, yet the state took no further action in terms of investigating the case. The state waited until late 2016 to submit the physical evidence for DNA testing.
So he also pointed out that the Lay had come back voluntarily, knowing he had that big $500,000 bench warrant out, that he's been working for the last year. He goes to NA meetings and is essentially on a better path.
Okay, so the defense attorney's argument is essentially, since the state waited 9 years when they could have moved on this sooner, obviously they don't think it's a high enough priority to justify the $500,000 that they're asking, and the judge tended to agree with the defense attorney?
The defense attorney's argument was, look, you can't say he poses this danger to the community when you waited this many years, and the judge wanted to see if the prosecutors had anything to say. They seemed kind of
surprised by that and really didn't have any more to offer. And so the judge released him. And actually, the jail log said $1 bail, but the court records show just on his own recognizance. But he was ordered to CCAP, which is a community corrections daily check-in kind of a thing. And they help you with, you do services, you have to do, you know, checks for if you're taking drugs, things like that.
Okay, and I appreciate if this guy's trying to turn his life around, if he's been somewhat clean for the last 10 years, but I'm still incredulous, Anna. A violent rape with a deadly weapon and a guy who has a homeless history, and we've certainly seen plenty of stories in the news recently of where homeless people are just in the wind when we want them back in court, and they let him walk.
Yeah, and maybe that's a legal standard that I don't understand. The judge seemed to think he needed more proof that this guy posed a threat. And what they had just wasn't enough, given how long it took to take any action on this. The fact that even after they got the DNA results back, which was in late February of this year, it all came back.
Okay.
And then prosecutors didn't file charges until May. So that, he pointed to that, too. He also pointed out, and I don't have the answer on this yet, statute of limitations is 10 years. So with the filing of this case is beyond that.
Is there a statute of limitations for rape one?
It's 10 years. There's an effort to change that in Olympia. There has been for a while. It has not passed yet. And so right now the presumption is it's 10 years. But the prosecutors told me they were disappointed with this zero bail and that he's out on his own recognizance, but they're still moving forward with the case. His next court appearance is June 19th.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I'm reading the certificate of probable cause from 2007, and what he did to this woman is animalistic. It's brutal. It's and the idea that, and when was he in court? The
Monday,
audio?
This Monday.
Just this week? Okay.
Yep. Yeah.
Well, we will absolutely stay on top of this and see if the guy shows up for whenever they demand him back in court, I trust.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're still waiting to confirm today. He has till today to register back as a sex offender here because right now he's registered as a homeless sex offender in Illinois because that's where he was living. So they tell me here that he has till the end of the day. I know from the court records, though, that he's staying with some friends in Kent.
Okay. And as Hannah said, this guy's background includes a felony domestic violence, no contact in 2001, stolen property in 1995, controlled substance 97. And then what Hannah mentioned, third degree sexual motivation assault on a 14-year-old back in 2001. Failure to register as a sex offender. So just a long, long history. I want to thank the listener who tipped us off on this story, and I thank you for all the work you did on this.
You bet.
Okay, Hannah Scott, and we will stay on top of this story for you. Love to hear your thoughts as always. You can text us at 98973, and we have much more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. Desperate homelessness problem that we have around here. By the way, I'm getting a bunch of text messages from people because I said at the beginning, if I was mayor, I'd clean this dump up. I'd just prioritize. I'd tell everybody we're going to do public safety, cops, and infrastructure. And everything else will be distant in the budget list. We'll slash the bureaucracy. We could save $150 million a year easily, just in cutting the number of employees that the accused child rapist hired. And it's not like we're a way better city now than we were 5 years ago. And it's not like with double the budget almost, it's not like Seattle is way better than Boston, almost identical size. And we have almost doubled the budget. But a lot of people said, because I said, you'd have to give me absolute power. I'd clean this up. It doesn't work that way, Dory. But one thing I do want to note is, because I always get these messages, and somebody in the texting even acknowledged this. Everybody says, you always complain about stuff, but you never have solutions, which is a load of crap. Because I don't think anybody offers more solutions than I do. What I've said about Seattle is what I said at the beginning of the hour. I would slash the size of city government. You'd still have the revenue stream for at least a short time, and you could rebuild the Magnolia Bridge. And by the way, I'd get rid of those bike lanes. and start releasing the gridlock all around the city. I'd get our staffing level in SPD up to the level of Boston Police. We have 1,400 cops. They have 2,200. I'd start enforcing vagrancy laws. I'd start enforcing drug laws. You'd have so much money if you slash the size of government and just prioritized. So stash away this you never have any solutions, because I talk all the time about where I'd save money. At the state level, I'd save the taxpayers $200 million by making Evergreen State College, the most radical leftist college in the country, have to go private. No more tax subsidy. I would save billions of dollars if I was in charge. But I don't want to be. I'll keep tossing out solutions, and maybe somebody will, because I'm telling you, the city's ripe for the picking. If somebody came along and just said, yeah, we're going to stop all the nonsense and we're going to start prioritizing. But if you want to know where to save money, just listen to this show every day, because I talk about solutions on a daily basis. But our homelessness crisis, it's not just this area. It's not just the Puget Sound area. It's the entire Northwest. I was heartbroken by this story. KGW down in Portland, they did a story on this couple, lovely couple, and they bought beautiful 5-acre dream property. And then they did something they'd never done in their life. They built their dream home. And it's just a modest little kind of farmhouse style house. It's not that big. And then...
For Joe and Diane Renard, this is the place they always wanted.
Dream home. Yeah.
This is a dream. We've never had a house built before here. And we just love it.
And they had some aerial or drone shots. And their property is just landscaped, and the guy mows the grass on these 5 acres, and it's just beautiful.
5 acres of farmland in rural Clackamas County, surrounded by forest.
And just see the big trees, listening to the owls and the frogs.
But that dream has become a nightmare, all because of the neighbors living right behind them.
The next door neighbor.
And I got to describe it, because this drone shot, it's showing their beautiful, you know, lawn and farmland and manicured, and then the camera kind of pans over to the very next door property where it's just garbage everywhere.
No.
The next door neighbors changed all of our lives.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't want to wish this on anybody. You know, we kept hoping that it was going to get better, but it just kept getting worse and worse and worse.
The problem started several years ago when the Renards' longtime neighbors passed away. A relative took over the property, and then came the mess.
They're tearing cars apart. They're tearing motorhomes apart.
And you should see it. They have chop shops everywhere. There's garbage piled high. There's a stand. It's squatters. It's homeless drug squatters that have taken over this property right next door to this lovely couple.
There's junk piles all over the place.
The old farmland next door is now littered with beat-up cars and RVs. There are tents and trailers. From the roadside, we could see piles of trash, including food waste. And if that isn't enough...
Excuse me. Hi, I'm Kyle Aboshi with KGW Channel 8.
Neighbors warn squatters have moved in.
Do you live on the property here?
We saw 7 or 8 people on the property, but nobody wanted to talk.
Of course not. Of course not. And they're not molested by the government officials at all, because everybody's too weak to deal with vagrant drug squatters. So there's something about the Pacific Northwest and the Seattle area and the Portland area where we have public officials who have become so weak at enforcing laws and taking care of drug-infested vagrant squatters. It's unbelievable to me. And these poor people who have had their dream, and now it's just ruined every single day.
Records show police have been called here 62 times in the past 2 years.
We're trying to figure out who lives on this property here.
Yeah.
Do you live here?
Take the camera off, please.
Turn the camera off, please. And I'll tell you something else. There are some communities... And I'll give praise again to the community in which I live, the suburb in which I live, because I knew about a house in our neighborhood that was, it was clearly a neighborhood drug house. pit bull on a chain out front. And our police department, because they're empowered by our city council and mayor, our police department went in and said, hey, we're going to start abatement proceedings. And they cleaned it up. They had to clean it up. They had to sell it. And I know all of that because I bought that property and we tore down the drug house and my wife and I built our dream house. But we got public officials and cops who enforce laws. Too many places in the Northwest won't. Fastest 15 next.